Again, it's good to see everybody out this morning. I will mention, did not give this to Gary, did not think to tell him, but Hope is not with us this morning because she's not feeling well. And we think probably sinuses along that lines. And Hope is, none of our children really complained or were, sickly or anything like that, but Hope was always one that she told you was sick, she was really sick. And so by her staying home this morning, I know she really doesn't feel good. And so that's why she's not here with us. But I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but actually there is an election going on. You know, we have been inundated with numerous commercials to a point that probably that all of us, and was kind of joking about it a little bit the other day, is that all of us could probably tell you the tagline or some of the main points of almost every candidate. It seems like it's running for every kind of office. And that we look and we see that, I'll be glad when the election's over with. And I know that on Tuesday night, probably the next number of days, maybe even into December, who knows, that there's going to be a lot of anxiety and a lot of nervousness. And the fact is that politics and government can be very polarizing. As Christians, sometimes we may look at things from a perspective different than the world, but at the same time, we do live in this world. I know there have been times when talking to various people, when maybe express a little bit of concern about the election, and the person would tell me, well, God's in charge, God is over all of it, and he had to have trust in God. And I say, well, that's right. And then maybe almost the next week or later on, be talking to the same person and then talk about the election, say, well, you know, God is in control and God is in charge of all. And the person say, yeah, but I tell you what, this could really influence a lot. And so it seems like we all vacillate sometimes between those two points of view. And so I thought actually a little bit about dusting off a lesson I gave 4 years ago, talking about keeping things in perspective. But I decided not to do that, and I decided to look at this here from the point of view of this question I was asked about Jesus, about paying taxes. Because in that question, in the answer, we find a lot said about the relationship between the person of the world or us, the servants of God, and our government. And so in the passage we had read for us a few minutes ago, Matthew 22nd chapter, it said, then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. And they said to him, their disciples with the Herodians, saying, teacher, we know that you are true, and teach the way of God in truth, nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their wickedness, said, why do you test me, you hypocrites? Now, this was a question that was presented to Jesus because it was intended to be a difficult question. And one of the things made it difficult here, in fact, the passage says that they're trying to entangle him, they're plotting against him, and this wasn't the only time that they asked a question along those lines where there's a disagreement, and they thought there's no way he can answer this to satisfy everybody. And so here what we have are two groups, first of all, the Pharisees. Now the Pharisees had a problem with this because they saw this paying tax to foreign government, and you go back look in the Old Testament. And we find that God a lot of times did criticize his people because of their allegiance to other governments instead of relying on him. And so some of the Pharisees looked at this as far as an occupying force. They didn't like Rome. They didn't like the Roman soldiers. They didn't like the Roman restrictions that placed on them. And so they just really had a problem with the whole idea of paying taxes to Caesar. And then on the other side, you had the Herodians. Now, the Herodians didn't have any problem with it. The Herodians were much more open-minded, and in fact, they kind of worked with the Roman government, and therefore, when they saw this idea of paying taxes, they said, okay. And so you had two opposing groups. Now, the only thing that really reconciled those two groups together in this situation was that neither one really liked Jesus. And so it would seem like, okay, no matter how he's going to answer, that he's either going to alienate the Pharisees and all those lying to them, or he's going to alienate Herodians and all those lying to those folks. And not only that, but also, as you look at it, we see that Jesus then, and that one thing also made it kind of hard was that the coin itself. And Jesus answered, show me the coin. As we're going to look here a little bit later on. But the coin itself had an inscription of Caesar on it. And also that inscription of Caesar had on it that he was a deity. He was God. And so in some ways, trying to think of it in our terms today, just imagine if you had a dollar bill or a bill that you took out of your pocket. And let's say maybe you had a picture either of George Washington or somebody else. And but also a say here to the most high or most supreme deity in heaven. An honor. And we look at that coin and we say, well, he's not God. He's not a God. And so that they looked at this here and they saw this as maybe even the idea of kind of worshiping God. Now, keep in mind that they didn't have a problem using a coin when it came to buying their food in the marketplace. They didn't have a problem using this coin whenever it came to maybe paying the rent or just everyday transactions, because this was the coin in circulation. This was money in circulation. And that's why they had to have the temple, people that actually exchanged money, because the money that they could pay in the temple and the money they used on a daily basis were two separate things. And so they didn't have a problem with that coin on any other time. And so we look here and we find, I think that it's been one of those situations where I could just see the disciples also. And the disciples thought about that question, kind of sitting back and kind of thinking, I wonder how he's going to answer this. Have you ever been in that situation where somebody asks a question and your first thought is, I'm glad that question is for you and not to me? And may sit back and think, boy, I'll tell you what, I'm kind of curious how to answer this question too. Now I can see the disciples kind of being the same thing, and that is, okay, master teacher, how are you going to answer this? And so Jesus' answer, as you look at it, goes on in the 19th verse. And there he says, show me the tax money. So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, whose image, whose inscription is on this? There is this. And they said to him, Caesar's. And he said to them, render therefore to Caesar things are Caesar, and to God things are God's. And so he used the coin itself, and that is, with a simple question, okay, whose coin or whose image on the coin? And there was an obvious answer. Nobody had to debate this or not. Everybody agreed with that's the image of Caesar on that coin. So he proved one thing, and that is, that coin came from Rome. That coin is a Roman coin. And basically, Jesus answered them, if Rome wants a coin back, if they want you to pay them back in their coin, then you pay them back in their coin. And therefore, you use their money to pay their taxes. That's what he's saying to these folks. And also, he says, though, at the end of that, he said, but also keep in mind, render to God things that are God's. And so we want to take a little bit of time and think about each one of these. First of all, what is Caesar due? And I'm not saying I'm going to say something this morning that perhaps you never heard before, but I think we have to keep in mind as Christians that there are responsibilities we do have to our government just as they had their government back then. And one thing that the Caesars do is that our response to the government is pay taxes. And that's what they're dealing with right here, and that is, and that the fact is, we pay taxes even if we don't like Caesar. Now by Caesar, I mean the governing authorities or the laws of the government. When you think about the first century, Caesar was not somebody that could be voted out of office. He was not somebody that would be term limited out of office. That most likely either one or two things, or maybe three things would happen to the lesser governing authorities in Rome. And one is they could be recalled by Caesar himself or by higher authority than them. Or second is, they could actually die in office, that is, die of old age. And third thing is, somebody could kill them. And basically, that's the three ways to get rid of Caesar back then. And so a lot of times they had Caesar, maybe they didn't like him, and they didn't like the programs of Caesar either. They say, you know, you pay to Caesar things that are Caesar's, and just think about government in order to function. Has to raise revenue, has to raise taxes in one form or another. When you go back to 1 Samuel, the 8th chapter, when the children of Israel asked for a king, one of the things that's mentioned, or a number of things mentioned in that chapter, one of the things mentioned, though, was that this king was going to start demanding certain things from you, and those things be like your young men would go and serve him, and your women, young ladies, go serve him, and he's going to start taxing you. And the reason, because governments have to have taxes. And another truth about this is that nobody really likes paying taxes. April 15th is not generally the happiest day of the year for most people. And that is that we realize, well, you know, the government takes our money and we don't like that, but if the government's going to provide something, they have to pay for it one way or another. And that's why I think sometimes when they do these surveys, and the survey may be, would you like the government to provide something? And maybe it's something that, you know, something along the lines, you want the government to provide, whether it's free internet service or free something else, and people invariably say, well, yeah, the government, I would like the government to provide that. But really, that's the wrong question to ask. The question should always be, are you willing to pay for the government to provide the service? Because that's what has to happen eventually. Somebody's got to pay for it. And therefore, there's a necessity for taxes. So when you go on to another passage here, in Romans, the 13th chapter. In Romans 13th chapter, again, we're dealing with what we are due to our government in the long line of taxes. And in verse 1, he says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you have praise from the same. For it is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For it is God's minister and avenger to keep wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for there are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore all their due, tax to whom taxes are due, custom to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. And when you look there, you find in verse 6, he says, so here's the role of government, and that is they are God's ministers. And he explains some things, what he means by that a little bit earlier here, as far as to punish the evildoers and protect the innocent. But he said the government are acting as God's ministers, and not only that, but also render to them their due. In verse 7, is what he's saying. So one thing we look at, we say, okay, that we are to pay our taxes. But another thing that we are owed to our government is to honor and respect the government. That's what he's saying somewhat here in our passage. And that is that we are to recognize their authority that they have as government. Over in 1 Peter, 2nd chapter, verse 17, it says, honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. And there is, he's talking about, again, the idea of government. And as we read these passages talking about honor, respecting, we have to keep in mind, it does not mean the idea of necessarily to personally agree with their position. Again, I don't think Jesus is saying to them, render to Caesar the thing that are Caesar as long as you like Caesar, or as long as you agree with the government programs of Caesar. After all, the very government that he's saying pay taxes to is going to crucify him in a few days. And so there are times we may look at it and say, I don't like that program. And you know, occasionally we have a group of people that may say, well, we don't like the fact that our government spends money on various things, so we're not going to pay our taxes. Well, the fact is, you can't determine what the government does once you get the taxes, but we are to render to them what's due them. And so I may not personally like the position or their programs, and we need to be careful how we speak of the government. As far as recognizing their authority, and in our country we're fortunate because we express the disagreements, but in some countries you cannot do that. In some countries you could be in trouble, you put in jail for insurrection. And so we have to just kind of understand that we need to honor and respect the governing authorities that we have. And not only that, but also we need to obey. We need to obey our governing authorities. And that's what he's saying here in Romans 13, verse 1. And there he says, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and authorities that exist are appointed by God. Now again, it doesn't mean that we all have to agree with them or that they're all good people. But by saying there's a necessity of government, and there's necessity laws, I may or may not like some of the laws of our land. But if I can go out there and start breaking the laws I don't like, if you decide to go out there and start breaking the laws you don't like, and your neighbor starts breaking the laws he doesn't like, you know, eventually we have chaos. And so it's a necessity to have laws so that we can function as a society. And so he said that we need to be understand their role as far as obeying them. And again, verse 4 says, "For it is God's minister to you for good. But if you do not be evil, be afraid, for it is not bear sword or vain, for it is God's minister and venture to ask you wrath of him who practices evil." And so they have the authority to actually punish people and to, again, to reward people. And so we are to obey their laws, obey the laws of the land. And again, we have to understand there, again, it doesn't apply that we agree with every individual. We agree with every program. But it does say that there's importance of government. And we start thinking about it, for instance, roads. How we don't have roads? While I was growing up, there used to be trails around the farm and other places, and you have two fences. And what that was, somebody said, well, that's the old road wagon trail. And what that meant was that that was in the days before we had any really structured roads in Butler County, in that area at least. And what that meant was that was the property line to places, and that's where they drove their old wagons, and that's where they got around. Everybody had this area between their property. Well, eventually they came in, they started putting in gravel roads. Who did that? The government did. And then they maintain the roads. Again, the government does. That's all necessity as far as the government does things that are important. And so in 1 Peter 2, verse 13 says, "Therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors as those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good." So we look here and we see there's different levels of government talked about here. The king talked about. Governors talked about those who are sent by him as magistrates, people of lesser authority. He said that we are to, again, obey them, go by those laws, because the government does provide things that are necessary. What would happen? Hypothetically speaking, what would happen if all of a sudden tomorrow our government collapsed? It's happened in other countries. I remember in days of Iraq, whenever the Shah, Iran, and the Shah was head of Iran, and all of a sudden he was gone, and the country went to total chaos. Well, what would happen here if all of a sudden the money we had was worthless? The deeds we had didn't matter on our property. There were no government authorities, no place to go and to file a complaint, no courts, no police. The things we take for granted, those things are necessities for a society. And finally he says to pray. To pray. As you look over in 1 Timothy 2 verse 1, "Therefore I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and reverence." And he says here, all those in authority we are to pray for. Now, the purpose here specifically said that we can live quiet and peaceful lives. So we can worship God without fear of molestation, as often phrased in prayers. That we simply can go ahead and serve God without any fear. And as Christians, we may have some questions about this. We may have a question, can I pray for this person? Maybe this person is an ungodly person. Can I pray for that person? And maybe more specific, what can I pray for this person? I don't agree with them. I don't agree with their policies. How can I pray that person? And maybe simply as a change of heart. I know many times, during the first Gulf War, we had a member of the congregation. He had some relatives that were in the Gulf War. And a number of times in his prayers, he prayed that the heart of Saddam Hussein would be changed. That he would recognize the God in heaven above. And it may be that simple prayer, that simply the heart be changed, that they recognize the word of God, and that we can continue to live in peace and quiet. And so we are to pray for those in authority. But then also he said, render to God the things that are God's. And as you look at verse 21 of Matthew 22nd chapter. And this always leads to a question here, okay, what does God do? And God's not going to charge me taxes, so what is he talking about there? And I express it two ways, and I'm sure on your lesson sheet if you have two answers there, places to answer. One is our allegiance. And as Christians, our allegiance belongs to God. That's who we are serving. When Jesus was asked a question about what's the greatest commandment, in Matthew 22, verse 36, and Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. What he means by that is that, first of all, that we are servants of God. That we are to render our obedience to God first. Above everything else, God comes first. And that can be hard sometimes. We find in Acts 5th chapter, whenever Peter and John had been out preaching the word of God, they were arrested. And as they brought them, Acts 5 verse 27, it said, when they had brought them, they sent them before the council. And the high priest asked them, saying, did we not strictly command you not to teach in this name? And look, you have filled Jews with your doctrine and the intent to bring this man's blood on us. But Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. Now here's a case where a direct conflict between what the government Jewish council was saying and what God required them to do. And that's the way he said, we have to serve God first. A lot of times we say, we have to serve God first. Now again, being realistic, we have to acknowledge that seldom really do we have that kind of conflict. We may hear cases, occasionally, maybe of a student in school that takes her Bible to school and puts it on the desk, and a teacher comes and rips it off the desk and takes the student to the principal's office and then have a stern warning to give that person. Or we may occasionally hear of a employer that may tell his employees or her employees that don't talk about Jesus or don't have anything religious on your uniform or anything like that. But those things tend to be more personal than actually government persecution. Sometimes those people are in authority, are using their powers to persecute, but not so necessarily the government authority to do that. And so fortunately, very seldom have we been told you cannot serve God. Now I'm not saying that cannot happen in the future. But I'm saying so far we haven't had that kind of conflict. But what we have to do, what we see though, is that it is possible. And the book of Revelation is really a book that shows the conflict between the government and the church. The first 11 chapters really deals with the church and the world around them, the conflict between them. And then the last part of Revelation, the conflict between God and Satan. And so when you read today, you find that it does talk about the fact that there will be conflict that will come in life. And so we have to understand that evil governments can come, they'll have conflict. Another thing is we owe God our faith. And by faith, I mean to trust in God. Over in Psalms 118, verse 8, it says, better trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. It's better trust in the Lord than to put confidence in princes. Now, princes, again, are people of authority, of people that have charge of things. And so they say, first of all, you put your trust in God. If you go on down to Psalms 146, verse 3, it said, do not put your trust in princes, nor in a son of man, in whom there is no help. His spirit departs, he returns to this earth, and that very day his plans perish. I'm always amused somewhat whenever a government authority lays out maybe a plan for 10, 15, or 20 years from now. And I'm amused by that because that person's not going to be around 10, 15, or 20 years from now. They're not going to be in place of authority at that time. And they had no way to implement those plans. There may be a person we think, well, that's a good idea and I really trust that person, but his life is limited or her life is limited. And so instead of trusting them, he said, you need to put your trust in God. Another passage over in Isaiah that's talking about Judah and prophesying about when that they will have persecution in Judah. Instead of turning to God in repentance, he says in Isaiah 31 verse 1, woe to those who go down to Egypt for help. And that means they're relying on men for deliverance. And relying on horses who trust in chariots because they are many. And in horsemen because they are very strong. But do not look to the Holy One of Israel nor seek the Lord. They're relying on political solutions. They're relying on military power instead of relying on God. And there's times in the Bible we have to realize that we trust God instead of political power. Instead of what's popular. And instead of just military might, there's times you have to trust in God. And in John 6th chapter, we see where the Jews came to Jesus wanting to make him their king. And Jesus did not allow them to do that. And so we look and we find that Jesus, as he stood before Pilate, and asked, if you're king, that Jesus answered, John 18, verse 36, my kingdom is not this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight, so that I should not be delivered to Jesus. But now my kingdom is not from here. Jesus did not die to set up a political institution or to set up political power. That was not his purpose at all. And the fact is, political power will not solve our problems. It may solve a few minor ones, but not going to solve the major problems, because our major problems is the heart of men. And without changing that, you're not going to have any really solutions to the problems that most of our society is facing today, most of the world faces today. And so we have to rely on God. Over in Revelation 13, in verse 1. And you know, Revelation is one of the books, of course, with a lot of imagery, and we read through this and think about what it's talking about, but just kind of keep in mind the general theme here. In verse 1 he says, then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising out of the sea, having seven horns and seven heads and 10 horns. And on his horns 10 crowns, on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as were mortally wounded. His deadly wounds healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon and gave authority to the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast who is able to make war with him? And what he's describing for us, and what he's telling us here, is that, excuse me, there, but nations can be like group beasts. They'd be like these wild animals tearing things apart and destroying things. And he said that as people of God, that our faith is not in the government, but it's in God. And so, well, we have to keep that in mind as we live through our life. And people put their faith in the governments, but those governments come and go. As Christians, the government is not our God. As Christians, we worship only the God of heaven. We do not worship the government. And that's what we find here in the book of Revelation, I think, talked about in largely in that passage. And we'll always have to keep that in mind. So let me end here with a few points of application. One is that on Tuesday night and the ensuing nights afterwards and the days ahead, keep things in perspective. And that is, you realize that every 4 years we hear the same thing. I'm old enough now, I can recall the election of Nixon and Hubert Humphrey. It's really the first election I recall. And you know, those were days of race riots and Vietnam War. And that was supposed to be one of the most important elections ever. Now, 4 years later, between Nixon and McGovern. And we have starting to get out of Vietnam, but still had a lot of issues going on, and you know, that was an important election. And then 4 years later, after that, it was Gerald Ford against Jimmy Carter. And that's one election, I guess, I look back, and I don't recall anybody saying, this is the most important election ever. And that may have been the one. But 1980, we had another election between Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter. And there we had the threat of nuclear war in Russia. And then 4 years later, it was Reagan against Mondale, I think it was there. And again, which way our government's going? My point is, every 4 years, we have to realize there are important decisions to be made, but when people say, this is the most important election ever, keep things in perspective. It's what we have to do as we go through our life. And the fact is that God still rules in heaven, and His Word is still true. The second thing is, beware of distractions. And I don't mean you can't have somebody you follow or somebody that you wish to, or don't vote for or somebody you want to win the election, but realize our purpose here is follow Christ. Our purpose here is to walk in the Spirit, to seek the kingdom of heaven, and do what God says first. And so keep things in perspective as far as that, and beware of distractions and getting too caught up in other things. The third thing is, don't forget to submit and honor our government. No matter who it is, that we still, the next day, we're going to still pay our taxes. The next day, we're still going to live in this world. And then the fourth thing is, pray for our rulers. And again, maybe a pray for a change of heart, or maybe a pray for success, maybe various things. Remember to pray that we can live a peaceful and quiet life as Christians, that we'll be able to preach the word of God without fear from outside forces. That as Christians, we won't be persecuted. Pray for those kind of things. And finally, trust in God and trust God. That's what we have to do as far as what we don't live our lives, is simply trust in God's word and trust God to walk over us. Over in the book of Daniel, we read there in the fourth chapter about Nebuchadnezzar having a dream. And the dream involved a huge tree that was cut down and then eventually sprouted back out. And Daniel's called in to interpret a dream. As Daniel's talking to Nebuchadnezzar, he tells him that dream is about you. And he tells Nebuchadnezzar you need to humble your heart before God. Instead of doing that, though, Nebuchadnezzar boasts about how great Babylon is, how great he is. And at that point, Nebuchadnezzar becomes like a wild animal. He goes out in the fields and eating grass, letting the dew fall on him. And eventually, Nebuchadnezzar comes to his senses. And here's what Nebuchadnezzar says, verse 34. It says, at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven and my understanding returned to me. And I bless the Most High and praise and honor Him who lives forever. For His dominion is an everlasting dominion, and His kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to His will in the army of heaven. And among the inhabitants of the earth, no one can restrain His hand, or who can say to Him, what have you done? There is no greater power than God. He had to recognize that. And same thing we have to do today. I appreciate your kind attention this morning. One last passage I will read to you, and it deals with 1 Peter, the second chapter, verse 10. And in that passage, he says, in 2 Peter 1, verse 10, and there he says, therefore, brethren, be even more diligent to make your call and election sure, for if you do these things, you will never stumble. And here's the idea. The most important election is of who we're going to serve, how we're going to fashion our life, what we're going to do in our lives. That's the election we make. I can tell you, I remember as a child growing up, my mom and dad didn't vote. And I remember mom and dad, you know, they pretty well really didn't care much about politics and didn't get involved in that. And I remember my mom one time saying, well, we don't have the right to complain because we don't vote. And I also remember hearing one time say that I don't know enough to vote. Sometime along the lines that things changed because I know in the last number of years they did vote. But I thought about that in a sense of how many people don't vote when it comes to their own election. Imagine, and I know this is almost beyond any kind of belief, but imagine on the election night that and then all the votes are told at the end and all the electoral college votes are cast there, that it's all tied and it's one vote that makes a difference. And that vote could be yours. But you don't vote. Well, you know, in this election that Peter's talking about, we already have two votes cast. Jesus, or God, cast his vote for us to go to heaven. Satan cast his vote for us to go to hell. We're the one who makes a deciding vote. But in this case here, a tie also means we're lost. Which way do you vote? Don't be the one that says, I'm not going to vote. Be the one that decides to follow Jesus. If we can help you in that selection, in doing that, won't you let us know as we stand as we sing.